This is Lecture 13 of The Foundations of Human Experience by Rudolf Steiner, the Synopsis. The form of the human head aspect, from within outward, compared to the form of the human limb aspect, from outside inward. The human being, as a quote-unquote dam, D-A-M, for the spirit soul. The absorptive tendency of the spirit soul process. The creation of superfluous matter, formation of fat, by the chest digestive system. How this matter is consumed by the spirit soul, working through the limbs. The pooling of the spirit soul in the head, and its coursing along the nerve paths. The opacity of living organic matter to the spirit, and the transparency of the physically dead skeleton and nervous system to the spirit. The overabundance of spiritual activity in physical work, and of bodily work in mental work. The overabundance of spiritual activity in physical work, and of bodily activity in mental work. Purposeful and senseless activity and its effects upon sleep. Calisthenics and eurythmy in this context. Extreme sports as, quote, practical Darwinism, unquote. Insomnia as a result of too much spirit-soul activity, and drowsiness as a result of too much physical work. The senselessness of cramming for exams. Healthy and unhealthy kinds of thinking activity. Importance of spiritualizing external work for teaching and social life, and importance of bringing blood to inner work for teaching and health. End of synopsis. Lecture 13, given in Stuttgart, September 4th, 1919. If we use what we have learned in these lectures as a basis, we can comprehend human behavior and understand how to relate to children's behavior. Our task is to use these insights properly. Concerning human behavior, remember that we must keep two things in mind, because we can speak of two contrasting human aspects, namely the aspects of the limbs and head. We must assimilate the difficult idea that we can comprehend the form of the limbs only when we imagine the head turned inside out like a glove or a sock. The result has tremendous importance for all of human life. If we sketch this, we can say that the head is formed in a sense from internal pressure, that it is inflated from the inside out. When we think of the human limbs, we can imagine them as being compressed from the outside inward through being turned inside out at the forehead. This is very important in human life. Recall that your inner humanity streams from within toward your forehead. If you look at the palms of your hands and the soles of your feet, you will see that a kind of pressure continuously exists that is the same as the pressure from inside upon your forehead, only in the opposite direction. If you hold the palm of your hand up to the world, or place the sole of your foot upon the ground, the same thing streams in through your palm or your sole as streams from inside against your forehead. That is an extremely important fact. It is important because through it we can see what the human spirit soul actually is. You can see that the spirit soul is a stream that flows through the human being. What is the human being in relation to this spirit soul? Imagine a flowing river, which is then obstructed so that counter waves form. In the same way, the spirit soul breaks and cascades against the human being. Human beings are an obstruction for the spirit soul, wanting to flow unhindered through them. However, they block it and slow it. The spirit soul backs up in people. However, the effect that I have referred to as a streaming is very strange. I have referred to this effect of the spirit soul as something that flows through people, but what is it in relationship to the physical body? It is something that continuously absorbs human beings. People face the physical world, and the spirit soul continuously tries to absorb them. For this reason, we are always shedding and peeling on the outside. If the spirit is not sufficiently strong, then we must cut off some parts, such as fingernails, because the spirit wants to destroy them by absorbing them from the outside. It destroys everything, but the body slows the spirit's destructiveness. People must create a balance within themselves between the destructive spirit-soul and the continuous growth of the body. The chest and abdomen are inserted into this stream. They fight against the destruction of the penetrating spirit-soul and fill people with matter. From this you can see that the human limbs, extending out beyond the torso, are really the most spiritual part of the human being, because in the limbs the process of creating matter occurs the least. The metabolic processes the abdomen and chest send into the limbs are all that make our limbs material. Our limbs are spiritual to a very high degree, and as they move, they consume our body. The body depends upon the development of what people have as tendencies from birth. If the limbs do not move sufficiently or appropriately, then they do not sufficiently consume the body. The torso is then in the lucky position, at least lucky for it, that the limbs do not consume enough of it. It uses what thus remains to create an overabundance of matter. This material surplus, then, permeates both what people have as a tendency at birth and their proper physicality, because they are born beings of spirit-soul. What people need is permeated with something they do not need, matter that is only earthly and does not tend toward the spirit-soul in the true sense of the word. People are filled more and more with fat. However, when people store that fat in an abnormal way, it presents too much resistance to a spirit-soul process, a process of absorption, the consuming process that permeates people, and then the spirit-soul's path to the head becomes more difficult. Therefore, it would be incorrect to allow children to eat too much fattening food. If they do so, since the fat blocks the spirit-soul, the head separates from the spirit-soul and becomes empty. It is our task to develop the tact necessary to work with the complete social situation of children so they do not in fact become too fat. Later in life, the tendency to become fat depends upon all sorts of things. However, through correct nutrition, it is possible when the children are not abnormal, that is, when they are not particularly weak children who easily become fat, to help prevent children from becoming too fat. We are irresponsible if we do not fully appreciate the great meaning of these things. We must realize that we interfere with cosmic evolution when we, for instance, allow a child to become too fat. Cosmic evolution expresses its intent toward human beings in that it allows human beings to be permeated with the spirit-soul's stream. We really do interfere with cosmic evolution if we allow a child to become too fat. You see, something very curious occurs in the human head, namely, as it accumulates, the spirit-soul sprays back like water meeting a weir. Footnote here, translator's note, a weir, W-E-I-R, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, is a partial obstruction or diversion placed in a stream or river. The water thus always meets it at full force, resulting in spray and counterwaves. End of footnote. That is, the spirit-soul carries matter with it the way the Mississippi carries sand, and where the spirit-soul is obstructed, that matter is sprayed back into the brain so that overlapping waves occur. This pounding of matter against matter causes it to continuously disintegrate in the brain. When matter, still permeated with life, is beaten back, as I have described, and then disintegrates, nerves are created. Nerves are always created when matter forced through life by the spirit disintegrates and dies in the living organism. This is the reason that nerves in the living organism are dead material. Life is displaced and dammed up in itself, and matter crumbles and disintegrates. That is how channels filled with dead matter, the nerves, are created everywhere in people. There, the spirit soul can course through the human being. The spirit soul speeds through the human being along the nerves because it needs disintegrating matter. It allows the matter on the surface of people to decompose and peel off. The spirit soul can only fill people after matter dies in them. Inside human beings, spirit soul moves parallel to the materially dead nerve pathways. In this way, we can see how the spirit soul works in people. We see it approaching from outside, developing an absorbing and consuming activity. Let me read that again. We see it approaching from outside, developing an absorbing and consuming activity. We can see it enter, see it dam up, crumble, and bring death to matter. We can see how matter decomposes in the nerves and how the spirit soul approaches the skin from the outside. Let me read that again, sorry. We can see how matter decomposes in the nerves and how the spirit soul approaches the skin from the inside out as it prepares paths through which it can travel. The spirit soul cannot move through what lives as an organic whole. How can you get an idea about what is organic and living? You can imagine what lives as something that absorbs the spirit soul and does not let it through. You can imagine what is dead, what is material, what is mineral, as something that lets the spirit soul through. From this you can, in a way, define the living body, the skeleton, and the nervous system, or mineralized matter in general. What is living and alive is spiritually impermeable. What is physically dead is spiritually permeable. Blood is a very special fluid. The relationship between blood and the spirit is the same as that between opaque matter and light. Blood does not allow the spirit to pass through. It keeps the spirit in itself. The substance of nerves is also a very special substance. It is as transparent glass to light. Just as transparent glass lets light through, in the same way, purely physical matter, including the nerves, lets spirit through. Here you have the difference between two human elements, between what is mineral and is transparent to the spirit, and what is more like an animal, more organically alive, and retains the spirit, causing the spirit to produce forms and to shape the organism. The difference is very consequential for working with human beings. If people work physically, they move their limbs. That means they swim totally immersed in the spirit. This is not the spirit dammed up in that person, it is the spirit outside. If you chop wood or go for a walk, if you use your limbs simply by moving them for work, whether it be useful or useless work, you are always splashing around in the spirit, and you are always connected with the spirit. That is very important. It is also important to ask ourselves what happens when we perform mental work, when we think or read or similar things. Here our connection is with the spirit soul living within us. Here we no longer splash in the spirit with our limbs. Instead, the spirit soul works in us and uses the life in our body. That is, it is completely expressed as a living bodily process. Through the obstruction within us, matter is continuously deposited. In mental work, our body is excessively active. In contrast, in physical work, our spirit is excessively active. We cannot work with the spirit soul unless we work inwardly with our body. When we work physically, the spirit soul within us at most participates by providing us with the thoughts to give direction to our walking or to orient us. However, the spirit soul outside us does take part. We always work in the spirit of the cosmos. We always connect ourselves with cosmic spirit when we work physically. Physical work is spiritual. Mental work is a human bodily function. We must comprehend and understand that physical work is spiritual and that mental work is human activity. When we work physically, we are engulfed by the spirit. When we work mentally, matter is active and excited within us. We must know these things if we want to think with understanding about work, whether mental or physical, about relaxing and tiring. We cannot knowledgeably think about working, relaxing, or tiring if we do not understand what we have just discussed. Imagine for a moment someone who works too much with the limbs, someone who does too much physical work, and what the consequence is. That person would be too closely connected to the spirit. He or she would be continuously immersed in the spirit when working physically. The spirit would thus gain too much power over the person, that is, the spirit that approaches a person from outside. We make ourselves too spiritual if we work too much physically. We make ourselves spiritual from the outside. This results in our having to give ourselves over to the Spirit for too long. That is, we must sleep too long. If we work too much physically, we must sleep too long. However, sleeping too long promotes bodily activity too strongly, the activity arising out of the torso, not the head. Excessive sleep excites life too strongly, and we get a fever and become too hot. If we sleep too much, our blood boils and its activity cannot be transformed. And excessive physical work creates a desire to sleep too much. What about those who are lethargic, who so like to sleep and sleep? This is different and occurs when someone actually cannot stop working. Let me read that again. However, sleeping too long promotes bodily activity too strongly, the activity arising out of the torso, not the head. Excessive sleep excites life too strongly, and we get a fever and become too hot. If we sleep too much, our blood boils and its activity cannot be transformed. And excessive physical work creates a desire to sleep too much. What about those who are lethargic, who so like to sleep and sleep? This is different and occurs when someone actually cannot stop working. They cannot stop working. Lethargic people do not sleep because they work too little, but because they continually move their legs and fidget with their arms throughout the day. Lethargic people are doing something, and seen externally, they do nothing different than someone who is industrious, but they do it without any goal. Industrious people turn to the outside world and connect their activity with a goal. That is the difference. Senseless activity like that done by lethargic people makes sleep more alluring than purposeful activity. In purposeful activity, we do not just splash about in the Spirit. Rather, because we act purposefully, we slowly draw the Spirit in. When we reach out our hand to purposeful work, we connect ourselves with the Spirit, and therefore the Spirit has less need to work unconsciously in sleep, because we work with it consciously. It is not important for people to simply be active, because this is also true of lethargic people. Rather, what is important is the extent to which people are purposefully active. Purposefully active. These words must permeate us if we are to teach children. When are people active senselessly? They are senselessly active if they are active only as the body demands. They are purposefully active if they are active according to the surrounding demands, not simply as the body demands. We must consider this with children. On the one hand, if we only ask the body what movements to accomplish, we can increasingly guide the child's physical activity toward what is just in the physical body, that is, toward calisthenics. On the other hand, we can guide a child's external movements toward purposeful movements, toward movements filled with purpose, so that the child does not splash around in the Spirit, but follows the Spirit as the goal. We then develop physical movement in the direction of eurythmy. The more we allow children simply to do calisthenics, the more we lure children into excessive sleep and toward an excessive tendency to become fat. Because people must live in rhythm, the more we allow the pendulum to swing toward the body, the more it will swing back into purposeful exercise, such as eurythmy, where every movement expresses a sound and has meaning. The more we alternate physical education with eurythmy, the more we can bring the need for sleep and wakefulness into harmony. This is how we use the will to maintain balance in the child's life. That we have slowly made something senseless out of gymnastics, have made it into an activity that only exercises the body, is a side effect of the age of materialism. That we want to raise it to the level of a sport, that we want to add nonsense to it, so that it becomes even less than senseless, meaningless movements, reflects a desire to drag people down, not just to the level of materialistic thinking, but also to animalistic feeling. Excessive sport activity is Darwinism in practice. Theoretical Darwinism claims that people developed from animals. Sports are practical Darwinism, and that means setting up the goal of degenerating people back into animals. We must state these things radically, because modern teachers must understand that they are to be not simply teachers of the children entrusted to them, They must also have a social effect that will affect all of humanity, so that things do not continually arise that would slowly make people more like animals. This is not false asceticism. It is something derived out of true objective insight. It is just as true as any other scientific finding. However, what is the situation with mental work? Bodily activity and a continuous decomposition, that is, a dying of organic matter, always accompany mental work, thinking, reading, and so on. We have decomposing organic matter in us if we do too much mental work. If we spend our day in non-stop academic activity, by evening we have too much decomposed matter in us, decomposed organic matter. This affects us. It disturbs our peaceful sleep. Excessive mental work destroys sleep, the same way excessive physical work makes people drowsy. But if we strain ourselves mentally, if we read difficult things that we must think about as we are reading, something not particularly enjoyed by modern people, if we want to read thoughtfully too much, we fall asleep. Or, in another instance, if we do not listen to the babbling of popular speakers or others who talk only about what we already know, but instead listen to people whose words we must follow thoughtfully because they are saying something that we don't know, then we become tired and drowsy. It is a well-known occurrence that people who go to lectures or concerts that must be thoughtfully perceived and comprehended, and who are unaccustomed to this, but go because it is, quote-unquote, what you do, such people fall asleep at the first tone or word. They often sleep through the whole of any lecture or concert that they attend because of social convention. Here again we find two differing aspects. Just as there is a difference between senseless busyness and purposeful external activity, there is also a difference between a mechanical thinking activity and a thinking activity accompanied by feeling. If we always connect interest with our mental work, then this interest and attentiveness enlivens our chest activity and does not allow the nerves to die off excessively. The more you simply read along and make no effort to absorb with interest what you read, the more you foster the death of your own inner matter. The more you follow what you read with interest and warmth, the more you foster blood activity and the enlivening of matter, and the more you inhibit the disturbance of your sleep. If you are cramming for a final exam, you are learning much that does not interest you. If you were to learn only what interests you then, at least under today's conditions, you would fail the final. The result is that cramming for a final disturbs your sleep and brings disorder into your normal life. We must pay particular attention to this with children, and it is best and most in line with the ideal of education to let the congested learning that precedes final examinations fall by the wayside, that is, drop final examinations altogether. In other words, the end of the school year should be just like the beginning. As teachers, we might ask ourselves why we should test children at all, because we have had them in front of us and know very well what they do or do not know. Under current conditions, this can, of course, be only an ideal, and I would ask you in general not to reveal your rebellious natures too strongly. For the present time, you need to keep what you have to say against modern culture to yourselves, so that you can slowly work, because in this area we can only work slowly, toward the goal that people learn to think differently. In that way, society can take on a form other than the one it has now. You must think of the interconnections between everything. You must know that eurythmy is an activity filled with purpose and is a spiritualizing of physical work, and that interesting instruction literally enlivens intellectual work and supplies it with blood. We must bring spirit to all external work and our life's blood to all inner and intellectual work. If you think about these two things, then you will see that the first is significant in teaching and social life, and the second is significant in teaching and health. The end of Lecture 13.